Welcome to the 180 Podcast. You are listening to a teaching of the 180, a new church committed to learning to love Jesus and love like Jesus. Our prayer is that God would use this teaching to help you grow closer to Him and that you would feel moved to join us in person, where you can grow in community with the larger 180 family.
Bienvenue à la balado-diffusion de l'Église 180. Vous écoutez un enseignement de l'Église 180, une nouvelle Église qui s'est engagée à apprendre à aimer Jésus et à aimer comme Jésus. Notre prière est que Dieu utilisera cet enseignement afin de vous aider à vous rapprocher de lui et que cela vous donne envie de vous joindre à nous en personne où vous pourrez vous épanouir au sein de la communauté qu'est la grande famille de l'Église 180.
Hey, if you're here visiting for the first time and I haven't had a chance to say hi, my name is Dominic. I'm one of the pastors here. And if you're watching online, it's always great to have you online. I'm always grateful for people who watch us online. Many of you know that some people who watch us online are just partners of ours. They support the 180. They believe in what we're doing. Some of them have never even been here at the 180 space. But we're so grateful that so many different people are part of this story with us. Kind of still like a younger church. And one of the things that we love, you probably kind of get this by now, is we love to think deeply about what it means to be Christians. We love to think carefully about our faith. That's why we have a class that we're doing, and I've encouraged many of you to maybe think of taking Wednesday in May as a night out. It's like a date night, learning about the end times. No, it's not. It's a disaster. But it sounded good for like 5 seconds in my head, and I'm like, that's horrible. Okay, but it's a night out to be able to learn and to grow. And so we hope you can kind of dedicate to doing that. Many of you have registered already, so that's exciting. But this morning, we're continuing in a series in the book of James. If you haven't had a chance to read it, we've encouraged you almost every week to read through the book of James. It's not a long book. It would take you about, like Mateo kind of calculated, I think it's like 16 minutes, 15 minutes? 16 minutes to read through the book of James. Like that's half a Netflix episode, whatever. And so you can read through it. And one of the things that we've been looking at is how James is inviting us to consider what it means to be spiritually mature. Okay, that's like a big theme, to be spiritually mature. Like many of us know what it's like to be mature physically because our bodies just get older. We kind of mature. You feel it when you get up and your back hurts. You're like, I'm kind of just getting older. But spiritual maturity is different. Spiritual maturity takes intentionality. It means we have to focus on it. We have to think about it. And James has been talking to us about this idea of maturity. I meet so many people who've gone to church their whole lives and are the most immature people I've ever met in my life. It's always shocking. I'm like, really? Wow. Like, because we think sometimes that maturity just happens, that spiritual maturity is like sprinkled on us. But it's actually, James invites us that it's a way of life that Jesus invites us to that takes time and commitment and focus and trusting the Holy Spirit's power in our lives. And so this morning I want to begin with asking you a very simple question. You think about this. If you're watching online, you think about this as well. It's like, when's the last time you did something that you never thought you would do? Okay, just think about it. Last time you did something you never expected you would do. Some of you are like, you know, you got married. You're like, I always said I wasn't going to get married, and I did it. And I regret it every day. No, I'm kidding. Kidding. It's okay. We can laugh. Just the last time you found yourself doing something, and you're like, I can't believe this is happening. In those moments, sometimes God reminds us that He's preparing us for something new. We're excited about a new thing that's happening in our life. This weekend, I did something that I never thought I would do. Actually, it happened yesterday. It was kind of an exciting time. I celebrated a wedding with a couple from our church yesterday. I have a nice picture there. And it was a beautiful celebration. But one of the special things about this wedding was I had an opportunity to kind of officiate and provide spiritual leadership for the wedding with a Catholic priest. It actually happened in a beautiful Catholic church, Montreal, and I was present in my role as the pastor, this couple, and friends, and then there was a priest there, and as part of the ceremony, I mean, for some people, a bit awkward and different and new, and some of you already are like, whoa, that's kind of different. Okay, we love you. It's all good. You're going to be fine. And so it was kind of this moment where I thought, you know, growing up in Quebec, this is something that for most people, like, never be possible. Like, is it possible that we can learn and think and grow and have our minds kind of renewed about how to get together? That especially in this province, if you're watching online, it might be different where you live. The tension around different ways of practicing Christianity has been a big topic of, like, tension. And so this morning, part of the passage we're going to look at in the book of James is going to force us to think about actually one of the ways, there's many ways, one of the ways Catholics and Protestants have actually disagreed about for a long time. It's in the passage that James we're going to look at in a little while. And, you know, while I was part of this, I thought, you know what, God has a way of inviting us into unexpected moments in our lives because he wants to teach us something new. Some of you are here this morning and you have no idea that God is preparing something for you to do that you never thought you would do. Some of you are here this morning and you have your life planned out, you know exactly what you're gonna do. I did that too. Many of you know this. Like, my plan for my life was to be like a rock star. Any of you know the story? Don't laugh. I'm already sad inside when I say it. I failed miserably. My whole dreams crumbled. I was gonna be a musician. I was gonna move to New York. I was gonna play drums with a famous band. I was gonna be rich. None of that happened. And like, I'm here. No, I'm kidding. I love what I'm doing. I love this. But we have all these plans. Like, I have all these plans, and then God's like, well, I have some other things I'm calling you to. You don't see it yet, but I'm preparing you for something. And over time, God started to do things in my life and in my heart. And then one day, I sensed that he was calling me to be a spiritual leader at first. I never thought I would be a pastor. And a door opened, and I walked through that. Some of you here this morning, God is about to open doors for you never thought you'd walk through. God is preparing you. He's preparing your kids. He's preparing you for a season of your life where he's going to stretch you, and you're going to have to grow, and you're going to have to listen. And most of all, you're going to have to trust him in new ways. Whenever God does this in our lives, it's always for the primary purpose of making us more like Jesus, okay? This is really, really important. In Christianity, the best way to define what it means to be a success or to be a spiritually mature person is to be a person that looks more and more every day like Jesus was, that lives that kind of life. I mean, our culture has a different definition for success. It's like make a lot of money, be popular, whatever it is. You can define it. But in Christianity, Jesus is the great model of what we're trying to live our lives after, what we're trying to be. And none of us can do that on our own. It's like impossible to try to do that on our own. It's actually the power of God in us that helps us to be that. Many of you, in the next few weeks, months, years, God's going to invite you to do certain things or to step out in faith and to trust him in new ways. And our prayer is that as we learn the Bible together and as we grow together, that you would feel the supernatural courage that helps you to just step out and say, Jesus, I'm ready to trust you. Say, Jesus, I wasn't sure I was going to have to navigate this kind of thing with my kids, but it's going to be okay. I'm ready to trust you. Jesus, I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to understand and articulate it this in the right way. You have a conversation with somebody, and Jesus is there, and he's going to help you. All of us are given opportunities to step out and trust God in new ways. James, who's the author of this book in the Bible called the Book of James, never thought that he'd be used by God in the way he's being used by God in the story. If you haven't been with us at all, you don't know much about the book of James. I just have like a very simple list of a few things I want you to remember about James, okay? So you can go to the slide, super simple. So James is one, he was the brother of Jesus. You can imagine how that hard that was. You know, every day your brother's like, guys, I'm God. You're like, shut up. So that whole thing. Mateo did a great job in week one of this series. You can go back and listen to it if you remember. Of what it would have meant for James to be like, could this really be the anointed king that we've been waiting for? Like, he's just my brother. Like, we wrestle. We lost him at the temple. It can't be that this is him. So James is going to have to learn, and we know that James at first will doubt whether Jesus is really the one. And another part of James's life, we find that at some point he realizes that Jesus is really who he said he was. He's not just like a good teacher or a good rabbi or just a good brother. He's actually the one who came to redeem everything. Because he died and he was raised back to life. And James realizes, wow, he was right. He was God. So James becomes a follower of Jesus. And at one point in James's life, James is introduced to this whole new thing he never thought he would do. James becomes a leader in the church. You know, we live in a culture that is like leadership overload. Like every book and every conference and every, you know, Twitter follower, everybody's trying to be a leader. James is one of the early leaders of the church that is going to have to learn how to lead in a way that honors Jesus, his brother. He's going to have to learn how to lead in the messy, broken world of the first century. I mean, a lot of people, as I've been teaching over the years as a pastor, a lot of people's like, oh, we just need to go back to the good old days, like the Bible days. How many of you ever, just be honest, how many of you have said that? If only we could just go back to the Bible. Anyone ever hear that? And when people say that, I think I know what they mean, but I'm like, the Bible days were insane if you read the Bible. Like, they don't have a dentist. I'm not going back to that, number one. Like, root canal without a dentist. Like, it's just do it yourself. Like, we have this fascination with somehow if we can go back to the good old days in the Bible. so great. It was so simple. And you can only really believe that if you don't read the Bible. But when you read the Bible and the Bible gets in you and you learn about the story of Christianity, you're like, this is a, like God's power and spirit is helping the church in moments where I'm like, if I was there, I would have no idea what to do. And this morning I want to introduce to you, before we look at the passage of James, I want to give you kind of a backdrop of James's life in a moment where God is calling him to be a leader. James is going to give us a glimpse of what it's like, how God shapes leaders. There's all kinds of ways people think about shaping leaders. You go to a leadership school, get an MBA. I don't know, you can do whatever. You can start a business, you can be a leader, right? But God has a specific way that he shapes leaders. And the story of the church in the Bible is most often, it's, you know, we don't have it in one, just one book, but if there's one book of the Bible where you learn about the story of the church, I'm just curious, how many of you think you would know the answers? What's that book? The book of? Jonathan knows. Huh? The book of Acts. The book of Acts, it means it's the great Acts of the Apostles. Okay? And in the book of Acts, we get a picture of how the church is developing its leadership, its structure, how the church is emerging, kind of really, really messy. And we're told, and at one point in the book of Acts, is that James is there. I mean, we're not sure if James always thought he would be there and be involved. And if you're taking notes, you might want to remember, this is an important thing. In Acts chapter 15, there's a special meeting that happens in the church. It's actually the first meeting we know of Christians getting together after Jesus is resurrected, right? They're having a meeting because guess what? They're fighting. Huh? Church fighting, Christians fighting, doesn't happen anymore. But it used to happen. Wink, wink. They're having this incredible tense kind of challenge, and James is there, and I'm sure he has moments where he's thinking, like, how did I become the leader of this? I don't even want to be here. Have you ever had a moment like that? You find yourself in a situation and you're like, why am I even here? Like, I don't know what to do. And so I want to tell you about what the fight is about. If you've never been part of a church fight, a classic. It's madness. Religious people fighting in our culture is one of the reasons so many people believe we have to get rid of religion altogether. It's one of the biggest arguments that when you meet people, they're like, well, religions, they're always killing each other and they're fighting and they don't get along. And it's amazing because James is inviting us. He's going to invite us to think about this in a new way. And so in Acts chapter 15, we have a council, which is called the Council of Jerusalem. Everybody remember that? It's very easy. The Council of what? Council of Jerusalem. And James is the leader of this council meeting. And they're having a unique debate and argument about something important. The debate is that there's two groups of people. So I'm going to make this as easy as possible, right? So you guys understand. How many groups of people? How many? Two. Very easy. There's Jews, people who are Jewish, and these Jewish people, some of them are realizing that Jesus is the real deal. They're like, wait a second, he really did come back to life? What? Like, they're starting to realize this. So they're Jewish people who've kind of started to understand that Jesus is really like God, okay? And then there's another group of people, and these groups of people are called Gentiles. An easier idea, a word for Gentile, is just not Jewish, okay? That means if you're in this room or you're watching online and you're not Jewish, guess what you are? A Gentile, okay? It's very, very easy. Two groups of people still exist today, okay? So Jews and Gentiles. And what we're told in the story of this fight, this debate, is that James is listening to two arguments about what is the best way to follow Jesus. And he's listening to this, and every time I read Acts chapter 15, I'm always like, James is probably losing his mind. And so James is there, and like, he's the brother of Jesus, so he can flex his muscles. I'm like, Jesus was my brother, shut up! He could do that, but he doesn't do that. Okay, I would probably do that. So James is in this moment, and he's dealing with how many groups of people? Two. The? And the? Beautiful, just when I think you're asleep. Okay, so the Jews and the Gentiles, and they're fighting. And there was a very clear kind of way of following God, of being faithful to the great story of God, was that if you follow God in the right way, and you were Jewish, you followed God, and then you practiced certain practices. You had certain laws that you had to follow. And one of those laws, if you're a guy, you know, was circumcision. You had to get circumcised, which was a physical marker on your body of like being part of this new family, right? Then there was certain laws about foods that you ate, and when you can worship, and how you had to worship, all of these things, okay? So the Jewish people on the side are like, listen, if people want to follow Jesus, We believe he's alive, rah rah, it's great. But they can't think that they can get away with not following any of these rules. And the Gentiles, the other side, this other group, one of the leaders specifically, his name is Paul, he's saying, guys, listen, like the Gentiles that are not Jews, they can follow Jesus without following all these laws now. Like, you understand, Jesus came to fulfill all of the laws so that people who are far away from God wouldn't have like stumbling blocks in the way of getting them to follow Jesus, right? Like in like putting like a wall here, jump over that, go through here. Like, we don't need an obstacle course to get people to follow Jesus. And if we tell people who are not Jewish that they have to kind of follow all of these laws, you know what? It seems weird. It almost can feel like as if what Jesus does on the cross and the resurrection doesn't count. You feel that? So how many of you could feel like a fight about to start? We're gonna kill you! So, and this is the bet. James, who wrote the book of James, is there. Awesome. James is like, why, Jesus? Why am I a leader right now? He doesn't say that. But I'm sure he has this moment, if he's human, where he's like, what's the right answer? You ever have one of those moments? Like, is there a verse in the Bible for this? Like 90% of the challenges you will face, there's no verse in the Bible for it. You know what? You're going to need wisdom and a community and scripture and all of these things. And James is there before the Bible's even written. And he's like, what do we do? And in Acts chapter 15, we have a moment where James, I guess, he just decides like, oh, it's enough. He just snaps. No, he doesn't. But it would be cool if he just snapped. Maybe he does. Maybe he does. It says this. When they finished, James spoke up. He said, brothers, you see the camps? You know the camps in your head? Brothers, get it on. No, he didn't say that. Okay. James spoke up. Brothers, he said, listen to me. Simon, whose name is Peter, it's also Peter, Simon, has described to us how God first intervened to choose a people for his name from the Gentiles. It's my judgment, James says, therefore, that we should not make it difficult for the Gentiles who are turning to God. James, like, you understand, like, God, it seems to me as I listen to this, that I know some of us feel that we were part of the story of Israel and we followed the laws and we did that the best we knew how. But that Jesus is alive now. We need to start to think of ways that allow for people who are not Jewish like us to become part of the family of God. Especially as God is opening up their eyes to understand that Jesus is alive. If it was not for this moment right here in the Bible, chances are we would not be here right now. That James went to bat for us. James is like, listen, like we don't want to make it difficult and make it all this challenging stuff. And I grew up in a context, sometimes in some places, where whenever somebody had to say yes to Jesus or follow Jesus, it was so confusing and complicated that I was like, I don't even know if I'm ready to do this. And James is like, listen, there's things that people need to believe, but then there's room for them to kind of follow Jesus and listen to Jesus on the way. They follow him. James is the great leader of this. James is the one that just kind of steps into the moment and brings clarity. Now, how many of you believe that this moment fixed the whole problem in the church? Many of you. It didn't. Okay. Just when you thought James had some serious authority. He tries, but for the next years and years that will go on, Christians, the earliest Christians are going to fight about this. How do we get along? Like, how do we figure this out? How do we model for the world that we're the type of people that know how to get along when we have differences? How do we do that? Are you good at that? Are you good at getting along with somebody who disagrees with you? When's the last time you had a disagreement with someone? Like a serious disagreement? Just think about someone you love, like your wife or your husband. Like you don't even want to see them when you fight with them. And you love them. Like imagine someone that you don't even like. You're like, I hate you. I'm never working with you again. I never want to see you. Unfollow. Block. You start going through the list. It is such a normal human thing to make disagreements or different understandings turn us into the kind of people that shun people and shame them because they're not like us. All of us know this. In the flesh, right? In our human side. We do this almost all the time. And James gives us the book of James with the backstory of knowing what it's like when people who disagree have to learn to get along. And so far in the book of James, you know what James has said to us? Hey, be careful when you get angry. Why would he say that? He's like, I was at the Council of Jerusalem, guys. You know how insane it was? Be careful when you use words to hurt other people. You know why James is saying that? He was at the Council of Jerusalem. Be careful that you don't like gossip about others. Be careful that you don't deceive yourselves in thinking that you're mature when you're not. You know why James is writing that? He was the Council of Jerusalem in the book of Acts. He saw this every day. He saw this and he's like, if I could write a book, God would help me. I would write about these themes that he knew was always on the edge of destroying the church and the witness of Jesus. Always. James invites us to believe that disagreements don't have to lead to division. Okay? James invites us to believe that we can have disagreements. I have a lot of people even in this room I disagree with. But the greater commandment is that I'm called to love you. And for Christians who follow Jesus, Jesus says, don't only love those who are like you, you got to learn to love and pray for your enemies. Forget that. Let's pray and go home right now. I'm like, are you kidding me? I can't even get along with someone who's a little bit different than me. I got to love and pray for my enemies? It's simple. When's the last time you prayed for your enemy? And not to pray that they become like you. Because I prayed that every day. If only they knew how smart I was. No, when's the last time you really prayed for someone that you totally don't like? You know why Jesus invites people to pray for their enemies? Because it's impossible to hate someone you pray for. If you pray for them regularly, something supernatural happens in you that you begin to sense God's power. And James has been inviting us to think about these different themes. And at this point in his book, in chapter 2, just at the end of chapter 2, we've heard it read. This is what he says. What good is it, my brothers and sisters? He goes, it's going to be easy to believe the right things and then not live the right way. What good is it? If someone claims to have faith but has no deeds, doesn't live out this faith, can such faith save them? Can you just pretend that you have the right ideas about God and not really practice that life? Suppose a person, brother or sister, is without clothes, daily food. If one of you says to them, go in peace, keep warm and well fed, but does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? James is using a type of writing which is to kind of make an extreme point, almost like saying, you guys get it, that it's foolishness to do this. James is dealing with a problem that is still very much part of our church today. And it's shocking how relevant James is still today. That you can confuse believing the right things with living the right way. You can confuse with having the right beliefs and never practicing or living a life that models the things you believe. This is so easy to do. It just happens naturally. And I remember years ago, I was part of a church where this was happening to our church. And I'll give you the example. Beautiful church. We love this church. I was there as a pastor for a few years. It was a large, large church. And one of the values of this church was that we believed in community, right? Who doesn't believe in community? It's like, go to the gym and you see a value. We believe in fitness. It's a gym, right? You kind of have to. So this church had a big banner, believe in community. And every time we had a service, we had a gathering, there were so many people that we needed people to leave before the second service started. We have multiple services in this church. And at one point we were in a meeting, and somebody in the back of the room, I'll never forget the moment, they put up their hand, they're like, if we really believe in community, why do we not give people time to build relationships and get them to leave so that we can get more people in? And it was like a pin dropped in the room. It's like, oh no, we're gonna have a fight in the church. It was a moment where we said certain things, but we didn't practice those things. You know who catches this all the time? Kids. Kids see this, right? Because the Christian faith is more caught than it is taught early on. Your kids pick up on the fact that you are living a new life more quickly than you just telling them, don't have bad friends, don't do that. Our kids just, they pick that up. We all know this, especially if you're a parent. James is like, you understand that I've seen people, James was at the Council of Jerusalem, I've seen, and it's so easy to see people who kind of have right beliefs in their head, and yet somehow those beliefs never start to transform their life. James has a word for this. It's a person who lacks understanding spiritual maturity. And he's seen this in the church. He's been a leader in the church. And at one point in this letter, he's going to start to say, listen, what we believe and what we say, when God provides opportunities for us to practice, even something as simple as feeding somebody who needs a meal, or clothing somebody who needs a jacket, right? James is like, you know that part of the faith that God's given to us is to live out this faith. Now let me say something that's so obvious, okay? Christians didn't invent helping people who need a meal. People are always like, well no, we're Christians, we're just helping people. I know atheists who help people. It's not a Christian idea. Like, you can be like a Satanist and help people. We're always confused where it's like, no, that's our thing. No, it's to be human is to help somebody, right? What James is talking about is the kind of helping another person where people get a glimpse of what it's like to trust Jesus with their lives. That's what he's talking about. So different. So I want to make this easier for you. If the word faith in this passage is ever hard to understand, you could substitute the word faith, because the Greek word has that meaning, for the word trust, okay? The things you trust, if you really trusted and have put your trust in Jesus, shouldn't the works that flow out of your life, shouldn't, like, the deeds is the word, shouldn't they model for people that now your trust is in Jesus? Look at how simple that is. Like, if you believe that you can trust Jesus with everything, and somebody needs help and you need to be generous, it's very easy for you to say, yeah, I'll give what I have, because it's really not mine, I put my trust in Jesus. It just flows very, very naturally. And so James is saying, you need to be those kinds of people. Now, this passage right here is one of those passages, probably it's me there, but it's one of those passages that has caused the church to fight for hundreds of years. Okay, so I'm just curious, how many of you were raised, if you're watching online, you just might help me, how many of you were raised in a Roman Catholic context growing up? Roman Catholic? Yeah, I was. Okay, so if you're in Quebec, it's very, very common. How many of you were raised in no religious kind of context? No religion at all? A little bit? You made it up? A little bit of that? No? Okay. So how many of you raised just Protestant? Some form of Protestant? Okay? It's okay. So we have a bit of half and half. So Protestants and Catholics, to make it really, really short, kind of the tension that emerged there started in roughly, let's just say the year, the 1500s, there was a big split in the church. There were other splits before that, but this is a major one that impacts us. And when that split happened in the history of the church, what quickly emerged is different types of Protestants. They're not just one type of Protestant. There's many types of Protestants. I mean, it's always shocking for people when I say this. It might shock you this morning, so try not to be shocked. If you're shocked, you can be like, oh no, do something like that, whatever. Okay? That when people say to me, well, Catholics baptize babies, but we baptize adults. Okay? And I'm like, well, Protestants, many Protestants baptize babies. People are like, really? I'm like, yeah. Do a Google search, right? Like, you can look stuff up. You can find this stuff. But when you learn about the tensions of Catholics and Protestants because of a backstory that, and I've lived some of this, and you have some painful memories of kind of transitioning your life and they're being fighting, Acts 15 style, like the Council of Jerusalem, like fighting, it's really hard to go back and to hear maybe a more mature way of understanding those tensions. And so in my life, I experienced this in waves. I kind of had my experience in the Catholic Church, then my mom started going to a Pentecostal church. Any Pentecostals here? Yeah, flags, yeah, flags, yeah, yeah, tambourine, Pentecostals, okay. So, some tambourine, no? Pentecostals, love. Trumpet, okay. Pentecostals, I had that. And then something happened to me that messed me up for a long time. I wanted to do my master's on the early church. And I went to Concordia, and the supervisor that I was given and I kind of worked with was a Roman Catholic lady. She's a leading scholar in my field. And I remember one day she's like, oh, so Dom, like, tell me a bit about your faith and your practice. I said, well, have you ever heard of the Pentecostals? I said to her. She's like, yeah, we love Pentecostals. She's like, in the Catholic Church, we have charismatic Catholics, they wave flags. Can you imagine me and that me? I'm like, what did you just say? I'm like, you, in the Catholic Church, there's people who act like the Pentecostals? She's like, oh yeah. She's like, you'll learn about this in class. Don't worry about it. My whole life, honestly, I was disoriented for like a week. And I was like, what just happened? So I began this journey and I realized something that happens to all of us. That sometimes the way we learn about a certain group of people, it's very common to disassociate all people because maybe we had a bad experience with one person, right? It's like, think about a culture when this happens in a culture. These are the roots of racism, by the way, in culture. You meet one person from a culture that's different, you don't like them, and you're like, those people. Every time you say those people, punch yourself in the face. Just like, you can't do that. Like, I know some people that are my friends, and they're Italians, and when, I could be honest, right? And when my wife and I started dating, my wife's not Italian, I was always thinking, I hope she doesn't mean those types of people first. Because if she does, her lens of, like, Italians might be a little bit skewed. They're a little bit sketchy. You know, like, we all have an uncle like that. Or two, three, maybe. I had that moment with my wife. I'm like, hon, listen, I know I tried to prepare you. My family is a bit weird. They try to speak English. It sounds bad. But one of my uncles, I said, I want to prepare you. When you meet him, he's probably not going to be wearing a shirt. He's going to try to give you a lot of wine to drink. And most probably, he's going to be watching wrestling. That was, any of you have one of those uncles? Amen, amen, love it. Okay, so no word of a lie. We go to the house. My uncle's on fire. He is on fire. No shirt, watching wrestling. By the way, wrestling's fine. I love it. But just to try to translate that and say, hon, you know, this is not an indication of everyone like this. But we know how easy it is when you're human to have an experience and to be like, I'm going to view it this way all the time. And so one of the things that James is going to do is he's going to help us to say, hey, when you have disagreements, be careful that you don't use words or talk about others or use these moments to maybe create division when you should be people who model a way of life that Jesus told us to model, where we listen, we disagree, we have different views, but we're part of one family, which is the church of Jesus, where all the nations of the world will have to worship together. Can you imagine one day in heaven? Haitians, brothers and sisters, the Lebanese brothers and sisters, the Italian guy with the accordion. I can't do that. I can't do that song. But the Haitian, it's beautiful. It's just beautiful. Jesus is like, it's going to be great. You're going to love it. It's going to be great. But on earth, we feel like this is so hard. Like, what do we do? The passage that I just read about faith and works has been one of those passages that Catholics and Protestants have wrestled with a lot. Because some of the times when we learn about, especially the Catholic tradition, there's a sense that in the Catholic Church, people have to work for their faith. They have to work to get saved. And James is not saying that. He's not saying like your works save you. He's saying your trust in Jesus, that saves you, and from there flows a certain type of life, which are works. Right? When we read this, we kind of start to develop a view of like, oh, Catholics believe in works, but we believe in grace, which is not accurate, by the way. Not actually true. And so we maybe met somebody or we see somebody practicing their faith in that way, and it kind of, we realize, okay, this is strange. But to understand the richness of different traditions, I often think that for us today, the Jewish and the Gentile challenge in Quebec sometimes can feel like, it's not identical, but it can feel like Protestants and Catholics kind of like fighting and wrestling. And there's a generation of people, many of you, friends and family members, that are trying to understand, like, are we really different? What are the differences? How do we get along? Do you believe in Jesus? Like, we believe in Jesus, but we have practices that we do that are different. Like, and so one of the things that James is going to help us to wrestle with is, how do we respond when we have differences? Now, I want to let you in on a bit of a conversation. This is going to be very, very different for some of you. There's a reason we waited for this time in the series to do this next part of the message, because we've been talking about maturity. So in the next few minutes, you're going to be able to test how mature you actually are. Because one of the things I've been experiencing is in conversations with lots of different people, the 180 is the kind of church where we make room for dialogues with people who maybe have a different view than me or some of you. And so a few years back, I interviewed somebody who's an atheist and is trying to make sense of their faith. And over the past few months, I've got in touch with a friend and we connected. You know, you can call it God leading us together to talk. And this friend of mine was starting to share with me that they were sensing that maybe being part of the Catholic Church felt more comfortable for them. And I was like, wow. I said, can you walk me through that? So we started talking, and he said, I have how I understand the scriptures, and I'm learning about the history of the church, and I'm not sure really who to talk to, and I'm trying to learn this. So we began this dialogue. And I had a moment in these conversations that I thought, you know what? I think the 180 family should kind of hear a bit of this dialogue. Like, I would love if our church could hear a conversation I was having with this friend. Because I know that as a church, we want to prepare you for real life. And real life is having conversations with people who disagree with you. Like, that's just it. And it's not going to be just Catholics, Protestants. It's going to be Hindu, Muslim, whatever it is. But don't we want to be the kind of church that takes the Bible and says, God, teach us how to live this. Teach us how to be people who have our trust in Jesus, but our deeds are a reflection of the fact that we trust Jesus first. And in the book of James, we're told how easy it is, and this is what James says, how easy it is to think that you can have the right belief and not practice that. And this is what James says. Show me your faith, your trust in Jesus, without deeds, and I will show you my faith by my deeds. I'll give you a glimpse of that Jesus has so transformed me that you'll see it in how I live my life and how I practice everything that I do. It says, you believe that there's one God? Good. Like, you have right doctrines about the one God? Good. But even demons believe that and shudder. Like, even the devil believes that there's only one God. But it's a follower of Jesus that trusts Jesus to live life fully connected to Jesus. So one of the things I'm going to do now is I did a short video interview. I mean, it was a bit longer, but it's a short one. It's about 5 minutes with a friend of mine. And he helps us to just understand a bit more about his journey of trying to make sense of growing up in a church and loving God and then feeling like maybe a different place, and God was maybe stretching him to the point where he was led to kind of be part of a Roman Catholic church. And I'm still in conversation with this person. So for the next few minutes, I'm going to ask you to do something. I'm going to ask you to just listen and say, Jesus, I want to be a mature follower of yours. I want to learn what it means to hear someone and even disagree with someone, but not have to lead to division. And to be the kind of church that models this and the way we practice the way of Jesus. So the next 5 minutes, just listen to this interview with my friend Justin. Take a listen.
Justin, for those people who maybe don't know a bit of your story, just give us a snapshot of you grew up here in Montreal and your story of Christianity. How did that all begin?
Sure. So I went to a church in Laval, an evangelical church. Mm-hmm. I grew up very into my faith, very involved in it.
Yep.
And
from when you
very
were young,
serious.
From when you were young, you were always interested in God
completely,
and church.
Completely. Yep. Yeah. And I think like a lot of kids, I really started taking it seriously when I was about 12, 13, and it really started to affect my life, and it changed how I thought about
belief, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, and my worldview and how I live.
And it's that time where I think what your parents hand on to you needs to become your own. Almost.
Exactly, yeah. And it takes on a real purpose. It's not just a tradition, you know.
Yeah.
And then this sort of similar experience happened. Now, recently,
good.
I started to look at my faith not just in the theological realm, but in the historical realm and how it's developed through time, basically.
Yeah. The kind of the history of Christianity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And my college and university sort of education really is what brought me to that understanding and brought me to appreciate history and to appreciate basically culture and how society influences how religion is developed and,
yeah,
and whatnot. And
yeah, for people who are not familiar with this, we know, we've chatted a bit about like
yes.
this class that you took.
Yes.
Where you realized, hey, Christianity, maybe share a bit about that class on
sure.
Icons and art
sure.
and kind of unlocked maybe these questions. You're like, whoa, I have a lot to kind of maybe read up on.
Of course.
Yeah.
So this was towards the end of my university education. I took a class on Christian iconography,
yeah.
which is basically Christian art.
Related to worship.
Exactly, related to worship.
Mm-hmm.
And it was mainly focused on sort of the more Eastern Christianity because that has a little bit more focus on the iconography.
Yeah.
And as I was there, I kept raising my hand, asking questions about, well, why is Mary depicted in such a venerated fashion?
Mm.
Why is, and basically it got
Good
me
question.
Into,
yeah, yeah,
and it got me into the theology a little bit more.
If we were to fast forward for some people, that class began a journey for you.
Yes.
And you began this internal
yeah.
dialogue maybe at first.
Yes.
Between how do I kind of respect the Protestant story I was given?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And how do I work out the fact that I think being part of the Roman Catholic way of believing in God and
yes.
Jesus feels more in line with what's going on in my heart. Like, why do I
right.
do that? So can you give people a snapshot of that next step for you?
Sure, yeah. If I wasn't Protestant, I don't think I would have looked into the Bible with such intensity to want to find out the roots.
Was it because
like that,
your
that
Protestant
passion...
upbringing taught you how to love the scriptures?
Exactly.
And how to at the 180, for people who are watching, I'm going to
yeah.
ask you about this. It's like, we've interviewed people who are atheists
yeah.
and have questions about faith. And now I think it's a great next step for us in light of the book of James to have an interview with somebody who's like, I think for me, you know, the disagreements or even the things in my heart that I was working out are what started to lead me toward the Roman Catholic tradition.
Right.
So how did you do that? Like, what were some of the steps?
The steps? Yeah, this continues on. It's sort of interrelated to the iconography and when I was in university, right?
In his class, yeah.
Yeah. So I was going through the thing that troubled me was that Protestantism has so many denominations and so many
expressions.
Sort of expressions. Yes,
yeah.
exactly. There were some differences that made me uncomfortable in some of these Protestant denominational branches, which I thought were essential to some degree.
Mm.
And I thought, why are there so many divisions? And then Aside from that, which division is correct, or which divisions are most in line with biblical teaching?
This is helpful. I mean, and we're trying to capture for people kind of a long journey in a snippet of a short video.
Of course. Yeah.
But one of the things that I would love for us maybe to kind of change direction,
of course,
is that the book of James that we're looking at is just about to land us on a text that Catholics and Protestants, not only in Quebec, but in different contexts, have wrestled with. Are we saved by works? Are we saved by faith?
Yeah.
Are we saved by Christ alone? Are we saved by right doctrine? Are we saved by, are we saved?
Yeah.
And you know, obviously the beauty of what Jesus does and the beauty of the Christian story is that both Catholics and Protestants would agree and have been working on clarifying each other's position on this, that we are saved by grace.
Yes.
Period. Full stop.
Yes.
So I think it's good to dispel the idea that if you're part of another branch of Christianity, like Catholicism, like you're trying to earn God's love, right?
Which
is such a... So for you, was that a shock to be like, well, I had a misunderstanding about this?
Yeah, that was one of the biggest things. That was one of the biggest things because the information that was always given to me from Protestants was that Catholics...
A snapshot or a little bit skewed or...
Exactly. It was always a misconception. It was that Catholics earned their way to salvation or they worked their way there. And some of them do, but I think some Protestants do too. We can both agree on the main sort of tenets,
but we might just explain it
differently.
We can affirm together that it is in the merits of Christ alone that all of this really holds together.
Yes.
And whether we have the words or the intelligence to articulate that well yet...
Yeah.
We're probably not there yet. There's still division. There's still,
our
hope is not that this video would somehow convey like, oh, we agree on everything. I mean, there's a lot of differences.
Yeah.
But we can work through those differences in a God honoring way.
Yeah.
Or in a divisive way that leads to really destruction and real division in the church, and that's unfortunately happened for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So Justin, I can't thank you enough for letting us into a little bit of this story. I want to thank the people at the 180 because I'm so blessed to be the pastor. In a church where people are really open to being a different kind of church.
Yeah.
And to really creating a space for this kind of dialogue. And I know people watching that's not always comfortable, but James calls us to become mature and to make room for Jesus to teach us new things like this. And so I'm so grateful for the people that are part of our church. And so our hope is that this video is the beginning of this conversation. So we're grateful for your insights today. Thanks,
Great.
Bud.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you.
See you, everyone.
Bye.
Wow. You guys need a stretch? I just want to say before I say one other thing is that Justin is here with us today. And can we just give him a hand for being able to share a story? Thanks, Justin. Thank you. It is really hard to let someone in on the journey of trying to make sense of what you believe and how to do that where you're not always sure. And James is kind of continues to remind us, hey, there's going to be disagreements that you'll have. There's going to be disagreements that are going to make you angry. There's going to be disagreements where you're prone to deceive yourself. There's going to be disagreements where you're going to be prone to use words to hurt others because they make you uncomfortable. That's next week. Just trust me. He's getting there. Like, all kinds of things. Because James was at the Council of Jerusalem. And he remembers early on where he's like, I saw how the division was causing people to even misunderstand the truth of who Jesus was as the only hope for our salvation is found in Him. This morning, just as we close, you know, Dave led us in this new song, and I just want to end just with that song again. It's such a song of the fact that Jesus is our living hope. You can be Orthodox or Catholic or Protestant, and there's a lot of different Protestants, and there's divisions, and if you're interested in that, there's some great theology classes. We have a great one here that's connected to our family of churches, the Alliance, but this is a great chance for us to be a different kind of church. You know, I was talking to a friend this week who has visited our church, and he said, well, the church I'm a part of is similar to your church. And I said, not after this week, it won't be. And sometimes we forget that to be a church who sets a new trajectory and creates new conversations takes hard work, and it takes courage. And I'm so thankful for many of you who are like, hey, this is hard. I don't think I would have ever gone this way or really had to think about this. But trust me that this is one of the conversations all of us are going to be having. And we're going to be learning how to have it with people who disagree with what we believe. And it won't be as easy as Catholics and Protestants. Trust me. We're still speaking the same language there. It's going to be a lot more complicated. And James says to us, Jesus will give you the power to be the kinds of people who model a different way of life there. In 1957, there was a preacher who was changing the world, and his name was good old Billy Graham. Billy Graham, how many of you have ever heard of him before? I'm just curious. Some people are like, who is that? Billy Graham is one of the most famous preachers in the world. And in 1957, he was able to give this massive crusade that he did in Madison Square Garden. And as he did this massive crusade, he realized that some of the Catholic churches in the area were getting very uncomfortable. They're like, what's this Protestant preacher yelling from a stage with a Bible? Sounds sketchy. And Billy Graham found out that this was happening. So he decided from then on, every crusade that he would do as he was traveling, he would go to the Catholic churches in the neighborhood. And he would invite the priests and the leaders of those Catholic churches to come to the crusade to celebrate that Jesus was king. And he would start to make room and say, we need to teach people that we're going to work together. And we can have differences and we can talk about that over a coffee, whatever. But for people who don't believe yet, the Gentiles, like, we want to be careful. We're not the ones just putting roadblocks in their way. I mean, sin will be a roadblock. Their own evil and pride will be a roadblock. But we should not be putting roadblocks. So he started to invite the Catholics who would come, just say, come to these conferences. And he started to do his best whenever he could to start to work with Catholics in their parishes. And can you imagine what some of the Protestants said to him when he started to do this? How many of you think they were in favor of this? Not really. Because it's hard. But he said, we're going to keep doing this because I think we need to model for people that we are his disciples by our love for one another. That's how they'll know that Jesus is alive. So I want to encourage you all that as we continue this journey through the book of James, to think of maybe one, two, maybe even three people that you maybe have learned to dislike, to hate, to talk bad about because they're different. Just be open and say, Jesus, would you renew my mind if there's anything I need to grow in this area? And if there isn't, give me the kind of grace that I need to have to disagree in a way that honors you, in a way that respects them, so that you would know us by our love.